Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
John Lennon is in the news a lot this week. Why, I hear you ask? Well, 50 years ago this week, the album Imagine was released, giving us tracks like, you know, Give Me Some Truth and Jealous Guy and Imagine Itself, etc. But also, some previously unheard John Lennon interviews have been unearthed, about 91 minutes, in fact, of mostly unheard recordings of interviews Lennon did with a Canadian journalist where he discusses his favourite Beatles songs, amongst other things. And Pat Carty from Hot Press is here now to talk about this. Patty, all right.
How are you doing, Dave? How are things?
I'm doing very well indeed. Let's take a look at all of this. What are we talking about here? 91 minutes of mostly unheard recordings. Any good?
Ken Zelig is the fella's name, Canadian journalist, as you said, and it's in 69 and 70. So the Beatles haven't quite broken up yet, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's there and he's with Yoko Ono, and these tapes were, this is now, let me put inverted commas here, recently discovered by his family, and they hope to sell them for between 20 and 30 grand. And I was thinking of you. And your family, they must have a security guard round the old vault in the Fanning house so they can go off and live in the Canaries when you pop your clogs selling off all these interviews.
Yeah, I never interviewed John Lennon, though.
No, but you have interviews with Macca and all the rest of them. I'm sure
Ringo,
you do.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Anyway, go on,
John,
tell me
here
about this. Yeah,
yeah, he's talking about, as you mentioned there, he talks about his favourite Beatles songs. So the first one he picks, he says, first of all, I'm prejudiced, I like me own, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
And the first one he picks is The Great, and that's an inverted commas as well, Revolution Number 9.
All right, okay. Well, if he's saying Revolution Number 9, he's taking the piddle. I mean, come on, lads.
Well, he does mention as well, I Am the Walrus, Strawberry Fields Forever and Rain, which are
good
three
choices.
Great choices. Yeah, of course. But he says, we, and again, I'm going to put that in inverted commas as well, were influenced by Stockhausen and John Cage.
But that doesn't mean it's any good. It's crap. I mean, Revolution 9 is the longest song the Beatles ever did and the worst.
And it feels like much longer than it is, probably, if you sit through the whole thing, which I've done maybe once, in fairness.
Oh, I've done it a lot of times. Yeah, I can even quote little things, what the little baby says in that, you know. And I think
it's number 9, does it?
It's Yoko who says, we go get naked and all this kind of stuff. I mean, seriously, they might have been influenced by Stockhausen and all the rest, but the problem is John was influenced by, I'll try not to be too cruel, Yoko, and therefore she got in the way. It's got nothing to do with anything.
Yeah. Well, my argument about that is, you know, if you read something like, say, Miles's book that he did with Paul McCartney many years from now, like John at that time was living out in the stockbroker belt, and it was McCartney who was, this is my argument anyway, it was McCartney who was in town living with Jane Asher and going to all these things and seeing Stockhausen. So I don't know if Lennon is claiming that retrospectively, but fair enough, whatever. Anyway, still Revolution Number 9 is no use.
Yeah, but I mean, like people say, like, he used to say, like, what Yoko was doing was very avant-garde. And then he said, well, what does avant-garde mean to you? He said, I avant-garde a clue. I mean, seriously, like some of the
stuff. No, but you know what he defined avant-garde as? And he said it himself.
What?
He said it was French for bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like, I'll tell you, hold on. This Revolution Number 9, when it came out first on the Beatles' White Album, people went, okay, we don't like this, but, you know, this is obviously before its time. It's worse now than it was then. So I don't know what he's on about. Okay, but the other songs, yeah, I agree with that. And was the interview friendly and nice and easy and relaxed, etc.?
Yeah, but he was there. He was talking about, like, he keeps referring to Ono. And obviously, he's in the first flush of love there, I suppose. He's very much in love there. And she says she reactivated the natural John Lennon that had been lost in the Beatles, which is a nice thing to say. And then he goes on further and this gets a bit dark, I suppose. He said he wanted to die at the same time as her, because if you had to live for 3 minutes without her, it would be hell on earth. And well, that's a nice thing.
She's going strong at 88 as we speak, and her parents lived to about 400, so she's got loads of
400,
time to go. Well, something like that. Yeah.
It's just after those bed-ins for peace in Montreal and Amsterdam. Now, I don't know what you reckon about them. I thought they were kind of nonsense, to be honest.
They kind of were, but they were good nonsense. I thought they were a bit of a
but you know this, you know the clip where they're in the bed and they're protesting, and then they have to get out of the bed because the chambermaid has to come in and change the sheets.
It's not easy to get peace. World peace is a difficult thing, you know.
Well, your man, in fairness to your man Zelig, the interviewer, he says, you know, like, why don't you give them some money?
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, just having a snooze.
Well, Julian Lennon would say, you know, there he was talking about peace, and he certainly wasn't doing that at home. He didn't give a damn about Julian, I can
tell
you.
There you go. There you go. And the other thing he talks about is giving back the MBE, you know, in 1969. So
I thought that was to do with Cold Turkey going down the charts or something.
Well, that's the thing, you know. He says to your man, well, I wrote a letter to the Queen and I wrote a letter to someone else, and I said it was a protest against British involvement in Biafra and Nigeria and their support for the actions in Vietnam. But he doesn't say there that he also put in at the end of the letter, and for Cold Turkey going down the charts, which kind of ruined the whole thing in the first place, I suppose.
Yeah, it's very John, I suppose, as well. Yeah.
Well, I suppose he does say that, you know, your man says, well, why'd you take it in the first place? And he says, well, you know, we were on the make. We were coming up at the time. And he does say, you might as well get a medal for singing as for shooting someone, which is another fair point.
These are quotes from the interview, yeah?
These are quotes from the interview.
All right, yeah.
Well, I'm probably paraphrasing.
Well, whatever, yeah. What else does he talk about?
Well, he talks about fame and he talks, you know, how the Beatles became possessed by the spirit of people adoring us and we lost our way a bit, you know. I mean, I suppose nobody was ever as famous as them before and maybe not since.
Yeah.
But, you know, that they had to deal with that. He also, now he has a go at critics as well, which is unfortunate as far as I'm concerned. He says, a critic can never be an artist because they don't understand. Okay. Now, and people, here's the worst part. People are wasting their time writing about music. Thanks for that, John. That's a great help to me. But the only other thing we have here is that he says, you know, they, as I said, they hadn't quite broken up yet. So he was saying, he was being asked about the future. And he says, well, there was no future really, because we didn't make plans. We didn't make plans after we stopped touring because people used to make the plans for us.
And well, I think the significant thing there is the Beatles played their last gig in August 66. And exactly 1 year later, Brian Epstein died. And once Brian Epstein died, they just had nobody looking after them. They had no father.
But you said the rudder came off the boat, so kind of a bit.
Well, like, I mean, in June of that year was Sgt. Pepper. So basically the rudder came off the boat before they went off to India, you know? I really think so, yeah. I don't know.
Well, you know, you could argue then McCartney tried to take up the old reins, so to speak.
And yeah, but John wasn't having any of it. Oh, there was lots of stuff going on, yeah. So the Imagine album then is 50 years old this week as well. Yeah,
that's
what do you
think? Yeah. Overrated.
Okay,
that's what I think.
I think it's the last great thing John Lennon ever did. Frank, well, I thought it was a good album.
Let's argue the case here. You know, first of all, I mean, with Imagine, you have it. It comes down to a lot what you think of the song Imagine itself, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah,
you know, because that's the thing. And on some days, you know, you'd hear that. Like I listened to that yesterday after Etna called me, and I was thinking, oh yeah, well, you know, everybody holding hands and smiling at each other—that's a nice idea. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. And then on other days, you'd hear stuff like Imagine No Possessions, and you think, well, that's easy for you to say, pal. You know. Yeah. Which your house out in the country and your millions of pounds, you know, that's not quite. But it's and also this is the song a bit ploddy.
I hate to say you're beginning to sound a bit like Mark Chapman there.
Oh, well, Shaney Mac, that's a bit.
That's what he said. That's what he said.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be as demonstrative as him in my criticism.
I certainly hope not. Yeah. Okay.
No, I mean, it's a bit ploddy, you know. I mean, the song itself, you know, it depends on, I suppose, the mood you're in. You know, because it inspired all that stuff from Liam and Noel and all that later on. And I suppose you can't blame him for that, really.
Yeah, but I mean,
one of the meanest songs ever written,
How Do You Sleep? I mean, my God.
Right.
You know?
But at least How Do You Sleep is a bit of a groove to
it. It's great, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, I mean, that's a good one. There's stuff on it like Crippled Inside and It's So Hard. That's filler.
Yeah. It was all okay because, like, you knew enough about John Lennon, but it's just that, like, that was the last good thing he did, as far as I'm concerned.
But,
suppose, yeah.
On the other hand, Jealous Guy is beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that song. And it's a great thing about, you know, fragility of the male ego and all that. That's really good.
And the opening track, Slagging the Politicians, Give Me Some Truth, that's good.
Well, there's two songs. I mean, that's the thing, right? Jealous Guy started off as Child of Nature, was written in India. So there's a demo of that included with that White Album deluxe thing that came out there a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And Give Me Some Truth was actually first rehearsed during Let It Be. So the Let It Be that's coming out in a couple of weeks has the original version of Give Me Some Truth on it. So maybe the two strongest songs come from the Beatles times, you know.
This Let It Be is going to be 6 hours of television on November 25, 26 and 27. It's going to be pretty exciting. It'll show the Beatles actually at the end getting on well, I believe, as opposed to the Let It Be.
I'd say so, yeah. But there's before that we get in the middle of October, I think, like there's the Let It Be album has been put out together, and that famous Get Back thing that Glyn Johns did that never came out at the time, that's, so it's three or four CDs, but it has rehearsals from all that time as well, so it'll at least be worth hearing, for God's sake.
Yeah, there's something else out at the moment too. Have you seen it? Which actually I would have thought, great, I might watch this. I thought it was really good, the thing on Disney of McCartney 3-2-1, where Rick Rubin is talking to Paul McCartney and going through Beatles songs. Now if you're a Beatles fan, it's actually 10 times better than I ever thought it was. Really worth seeing. Have you seen it?
I watched it a couple of times. I think it's fantastic.
It really is. Good,
and I'd have to take my hat off to Rick Rubin, because when you watch it the first time, you think, Jenny, he's kind of toadying to him. He's been a bit obsequious, but he really gets the stuff out of him.
He really does. And he's able to separate the instruments on the thingy, Bob, and you suddenly see bits of his.
Oh, yeah.
Like Paul is genuinely saying, oh, my God, there's Ringo. Or that's George doing this. It's pretty good.
Well, I think the great thing is you watch McCartney jumping up out of the seat.
Yeah.
And he's excited, you know, and he's hearing all these, and the stories come out of him. And also he's kind of looking sideways at Rick Rubin all the time and nodding, going, pretty good, right? I was in the Beatles. That's pretty class.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's called McCartney 321, and it is very good. It's on Disney, and it's well. It's about 5.5 hours or so thereabouts. So the John Lennon tapes. Well, I have to buy it for $30,000 to hear it.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking myself and yourself could put together. Now I'll throw in $1,000 or something. You're a bit better off than I am.
I presume. Like, I mean, wait a minute. They're selling this without letting us hear it. Is that it?
Well, I would say the thing is, I mean, if you sold that to. So you can make, you'd have to make some money out of it, wouldn't you? So if I bought that, I'd want to be able to, I'd want the exclusive rights to it, to sell it to documentaries and stuff like that. I presume Yoko will put her hand in her pocket, no? Would that not be the smart thing to do?
Yeah, it probably would, all right. She had to join with all the other stuff, the stuff that she never left for Julian. None of it, he had to go and
buy it. Would she ring them up and say, imagine a cloud crying in your back garden, dig a hole for it and give me those tapes for nothing?
That's exactly what she was doing. Because as your man said in his book, she never saw a cloud without finding a metaphor.
Oh, are you talking about that Beatles thing that came out last year?
Yeah,
that's a great
Craig book, Craig thingamabob. Yeah, it's brilliant.
He just goes for the ankles with
what
her.
A now, fantastic I tell you, book.
A strange thing about that, I wrote a review of that. And I had people giving out to me I was called racist and misogynist and all this. Are you not? Is it not okay that I just don't like her music? Is that not acceptable enough?
Well, I'll tell you, when they repeated the... Craig Brown is the guy, yeah. When they re-released that Double Fantasy album and all the Yoko tracks are in there too, you should hear
it.
It's just frightening.
Oh, my God, yeah. No, it is frightening. Do you know what it was? I'll tell you what. This morning, right? I was fast asleep in my bed, and 6 o'clock this morning, the fire alarm went off, and I had to jump out of the bed and put on my trousers and my t-shirt and see what was going on. And it sounded a bit like a Yoko Ono record, something going on in my house.
Oh, yeah. She famously get the bed, a fantastic, huge, big bed from Fortnum and Mason, or somebody, I don't know, and had to knock down the walls of Abbey Road to bring it in so she can scream under a blanket. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And that at least they turned the mics down for that one.
That
yeah.
brings us back to Revolution number 9. All right, listen, Pat, good man yourself. We'll get to hear it somewhere. Pat Carty,
good man,
it is. Thank you very much, Pat.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.